Is Israel trying to starve the Palestinians in Gaza? That's at the center of accusations against Israel of genocide. We talked to an organization very active on the ground to get a look at the food supply situation in Gaza on today's Trumpet World. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has been at the center of a lot of controversy. It's a non-profit, non-partisan organization designed to give out food in Gaza independently of Hamas. But it's faced some serious criticism. It's been accused of firing at civilians and even weaponizing aid. On today's episode, we talk to Chapin Fay, spokesman for the GHF, on those accusations and on the reality of Gaza's food situation. So a few days ago, the UN declared the situation in Gaza a famine, and I understand they fudged some of their usual standards. They were kind of selective with the data to do that. But what is the reality of the situation on the ground in Gaza?
Sure. So, like you said, there's been news reports about that, and the definition of famine and all that is for others to debate. Our goal at the GHF is just to feed as many people as we can. And so the need in the north, where we're not operating, certainly is more acute than in the south, where we are, and central. But we, you know, because of the aid getting in now, and particularly our efforts, we are not seeing the kind of starvation that you're reading about. I'm not here to deny that these are desperate, hungry people, many of whom rely on our aid and others to live and to feed their families. But we serve, we are within service of about 1 million Gazans, and we've delivered 136 million meals in 3 months, and we put them directly into their hands. A lot of them come back every day. A lot of them, like I said, rely on our aid and our aid boxes to feed their families. So we're actually seeing healthier people as the days go on. And so we're not seeing the same kind of starvation level. And I do think because aid is getting in at a greater level now, that's alleviating some of the pressure. We're glad, GHF believes that the answer to many of the problems in Gaza is more aid. So we're glad that airdrops are happening. But are concerned, of course, about the safety of those. We're glad the United Nations has gotten off the sidelines and is trying to move trucks further into Gaza. But we're also concerned about the safety and security of those convoys. You can see them being swarmed. You can see people being trampled. And you can see armed men looting it. So we're concerned about that. But more aid getting in is good, and it's bringing the pressure down. It's allowing us to innovate and try new ways to put food directly into people's hands.
So did you see more of, say, a desperate situation, you know, starvation right at the beginning when GFF was first getting set up in Gaza?
Sure. There's no question, particularly at the people served at our sites, that the situation is getting better. But that doesn't remove the problem completely, right? There are hungry people that rely on the aid coming in. So we're going to keep doing it, and we hope to expand and actually serve more people. But certainly in the areas where we're operating in, the pressure has started to come out. The crowds are getting friendlier and easier on the aid and the process. In fact, we have, you know, our model sees local Gazans as the first instance, dealing with the crowd and feeding, in many cases, their friends and neighbors, working alongside our humanitarians, whose job it is to get to know the crowd, get to know the aid seekers, have a two-way dialogue with them. And in fact, many of our innovations, we have a flag system at one of our sites to communicate, come from the aid seekers themselves, just as the flag system. We have a red flag that's up when it's closed. A green flag goes up when it's open. That was a suggestion directly from the aid seekers. We also have other innovations. We have pilot programs where we're delivering truckloads of potatoes and onions, which have been received very well, fresh vegetables that have a longer shelf life. We started, over a month, maybe 2 months ago, we started separate women's distributions in two ways. One is just a complete separate women's opportunity. And another way is we hold aid back after we've dispersed the crowd of younger men. Sometimes the younger, faster men get more aid or get to the aid first. leaving behind women and children and the elderly. So we've fixed that problem by having these separate distributions. We're also very proud of a new pilot program. We have a reservation system based on the trust we have with the crowds and with the aid seekers. We now have a system where women can, during their women's distribution, reserve aid, so it's guaranteed to be there. They don't have to fight the crowds. They can show up afterwards. They, you know, they come in, they organize themselves, and you know, we put a parcel of aid directly into their hands, and it's been received very well. And we hope to expand that program very soon as well.
So with these innovations, you know, when GHF was first getting set up, I was seeing headlines. You know, there was all this controversy about firing on the crowds, and mm-hmm. there were accusations of GHF firing on the crowds. I think the GHF said, "Well, no, we were firing warning shots." I've not seen many news stories about that over the last few weeks. It seems like a lot of the crowd control issues have gone away. Is that something where you had some initial challenges, you've learned, and now things are calming down and it's getting better?
It's actually not like that at all. Just to clear up one thing that you said, our security personnel have never fired a weapon at anyone, ever. They use only non-lethal means of crowd control. We use less and less of that every day as well. So what you are saying is true, that as the pressure is alleviating across Gaza slightly and more to the south where we are, and as we've built up this trust on both sides of the aisle here with the aid seekers, we rarely use even non-lethal crowd control. But our security personnel are very highly trained, intelligent, and skilled former military operators. And they are hired not because they know how to pull a trigger, but because they know how not to. Hamas causes trouble on occasion. They're looking to get our guys to fire at them, and they never have, never once. We've only had two instances of violence on our sites. One was a Hamas-style grenade that was thrown over the berm and injured two American workers who are okay now. And the second was in mid-July, a very tragic and unfortunate event in which Hamas fomented a stampede. Crowds, as you know, are part of the most dangerous aspects of this operation, particular to the aid seekers themselves. And regrettably, and unfortunately, 19 people were trampled to death. But in an example of how our security personnel are so highly trained, on the two instances on that day, one, we have fired into the air on occasion for crowd control, the most recent of which was that day in July when a former Marine fired into the air during the stampede so he could run into it and save a child's life, which he did. Multiple people's lives were saved that day, aid seekers. Also that same day, a Hamas-style pistol from Iran was pulled on one of our security personnel. He didn't raise his weapon. He ran at the man, tackled him, and wrestled the gun away, and the man ran away back into the crowd in a non-lethal way. So that's just an example of how highly trained and how highly skilled these guys are. And again, just to be clear, we've never shot at anyone, and that is not us. So that is why you're seeing, I think, the media has been confronted with the facts on the ground now, and it's much more difficult to write these stories that are misleading at best and false at worst. You know, this is the most complex humanitarian crisis of our lifetime, and it's happening in a war zone. I'm not here to say there are no casualties in this war and that everywhere in Gaza is safe, but our sites are safe and secure. We've never shot anyone. And we have, like I said, local Palestinian workers alongside our humanitarian workers and security personnel all working together with one mission to feed the people of Gaza in a way that Hamas cannot steal it. And we've done it to the tune of 136 million meals delivered in 3 months. So our model is working.
And for security at your site, is it only your own personnel that are providing security? Is there a role for the IDF? Is there a role that local Gaza militia forces play? Or is it just purely your own security?
So it is our own security. The IDF and any militia you just mentioned, never on site. The IDF is not on our site. We are responsible for the safety and security of our aid, our sites, the aid seekers, and our own personnel. And we're proud of our record in that regard. But the IDF is, you know, waging war. They're conducting operations and they're responsible for the safety and security of the rest of Gaza. We work with them simply to deconflict outside of the sites. And, you know, so we have a good relationship there, but we are responsible for the safety and security of our sites. And like I said, we've never had shooting casualties. We never shot at anyone. We do not use live fire for crowd control at all. The U.S. military is actually not trained to use live fire for crowd control or to use lethal force for crowd control. It's not like last on a list of tactics for them. It's not on the list, right? So they would never fire at anyone for crowd control purposes, and we haven't. So I think you're seeing. I think the you know I think the real story is getting out there now. So that's why it's much harder for the media to write the kind of headlines that they have been. The other thing I would say is you're seeing now United Nations convoys and the dangerous situation that's happening there. We have an open invitation to collaborate with them, and I think there's progress being made on conversations in that regard back in New York at the United Nations and our leadership, and we're very hopeful and optimistic that there can be a partnership in the coming weeks. Hopefully not months, because we could provide security, we can provide trucks, drivers, they can provide aid, and vice versa. And if we work together to feed people, imagine how many more people we could be feeding if we work together. But again, GHF is very pleased that more aid is getting in. We believe more aid is the answer to a lot of these problems. So even though there are security concerns with the other methods, we're glad that aid is getting out there to people.
And are you concerned that some of this UN aid could end up in the hands of Hamas and being used to kind of bolster Hamas's power, which, I mean, as I understand it, that's a core part of some of the thinking behind GHF. I don't know how much of that is from those of you involved in GHF itself, or maybe that's something just in the minds of kind of like Israel approving GHF to go ahead. But as I understand it, a core part of the reason it's there is to stop Hamas kind of monopolizing food supplies and using that to bolster their power. Are you concerned that then more UN food could just end up with Hamas?
Sure. And so I can't speak for the government of Israel. GHF is an independent, neutral humanitarian aid organization with, like you said, with one mission, which is to feed the people of Gaza in a way that Hamas or anyone else cannot steal it. And we've had zero diversion of our aid. We are concerned with the other methods, particularly those in the UN umbrella. You can see these convoys. At best, they're swarmed by thousands of hungry people. That creates a dangerous situation for trampling, and the truck drivers get pulled out. It's a very dangerous job to be a local Gazan truck driver these days. And at worst, Hamas is diverting the aid. By the UN's own numbers on their website, in the month of August alone, only 6.5% of the aid was not diverted. Only 6.5% of their aid, over 1,000 trucks, got to where it's supposed to go. And again, that's because this is complex, and it's happening in a war zone, and Hamas, has a much stronger foothold in the north than where we are operating. But again, if we could collaborate, we're confident that we could help the UN get their aid where it needs to go. We're also optimistic that those conversations are moving forward in a positive way, in a productive way. We just had last week a letter sent, not we, but 200, over 200 international NGOs from over 15 countries sent a letter publicly to the United Nations, calling on them to collaborate with us in both funding and logistics, and to stop any policies that would hinder our work. So the word is getting out there. We actually have, we're very happy to have Samaritan's Purse, an international NGO, providing medical aid on our sites now. We also were grateful to be able to distribute RUSF that they've provided and donated, ready-to-use supplemental food. It's called Plumpy Nut. It's sort of like a peanut buttery substance that's meant to supplement children's nutrition. We hand that out during the women's distributions directly in the parcels that we hand to them. So we're grateful that Samaritan's Purse has donated that and is working with us to provide medical aid. We've never refused anyone medical aid. We have highly trained medics ourselves, as well as the Samaritan's Purse doctors and nurses. There are sometimes, injuries in the crowd. Many of the Palestinians do not have shoes, so there's often some foot injuries and bleeding. And Samaritan's Purse is there, risking their lives right alongside everybody else to help provide that badly needed medical aid. So we're happy that that's happening.
And are there any plans to expand the sites and the number of places availability? Again, I think this was earlier on when GHF was just getting set up. There was one of the major criticisms was people have to go too far to get to the sites. It's not feasible for people to spend that long to come and collect food. I understand you've expanded the sites since then. Is that going to continue? Where would you stop? And any plans to go to the north, or is that you're just going to leave that to a different system?
Well, no. We were originally envisioned to have eight sites, and by the way, one of our criticisms is that we've replaced the United Nations system. We were never meant to replace the UN. That was not part of our mission. That was not our vision. We were meant to supplement and be one part of a complex solution to a complex problem. But we are operating four sites now, and we are hoping to go to eight very soon. We are ready, willing, and eager to move northward as well. And we are, awaiting official confirmation from the US government on their plan for expansion of aid into Gaza. But GHF stands ready, willing, able, and eager to feed more people and to expand our sites. And those discussions and implementation is starting now.
And are people having to spend a long time traveling to get there at the moment, or are you kind of close to population centers?
The Gaza Strip is one of, if not, I think it's the most densely populated place on planet Earth. It's a very small area, and with a lot of people in it. And we are within reach of about a million of them. There's no question that some are traveling too far through a war zone. There are few and fewer of those now. We see a lot of repeat faces in our crowds. There are some displaced Gazans living nearby many of our sites, and they come every day and they rely on our aid to feed their families, which they are doing with our aid. But there is, the need and the hunger is more acute in the north where we're not operating, which is one reason we're eager to get up there. But the IDF controls Gaza, right? And they're waging a war. So we're beholden to them to deconflict and make areas of Gaza safe, and then we can begin operation. But we would like to feed more people. We would like to help the United Nations get their food to the people who need it most. And again, we're ready to do that. But we see actually the faces and the people who come to our site repeatedly. The health is getting stronger. Their faces are getting fuller. I'm not here to deny that there's a desperate need for food and aid. But we are delivering it to the tune of 136 million meals in just 3 months. And we would love to expand that and do more in the north. But for now, we're operating our four sites as efficiently and safely as we can.
And you mentioned local partners. I mean, what is your relationship with people on the ground? Obviously, Hamas is hostile. But beyond Hamas, say the wider public, what's their response to you?
Well, so the response has been good. We've built up a trust with the aid seekers community. Our humanitarian team, that's their job, right? We have local Palestinian workers who know the crowd in many cases and are feeding their friends and neighbors. But you mentioned the Hamas threat. They live on site now because of the Hamas threat. They have to cover their faces because of the Hamas threat to them and their families, simply for feeding people. But our humanitarian workers work with them to talk to the crowd, to make sure that the boxes have what they need, to make sure, did you get flour today? Did you get coconut oil today? What items would be of more value to you as we look to innovate and do new things and make sure that it's done with dignity and humanity. And many of our distribution methods and many of our tactics on site, those come directly from the aid seekers. Consistency and communication are two of the most important things in a humanitarian operation like this. And so we communicate in many ways with the crowd, word of mouth, social media. Many of them have devices that we can communicate with. And so we've built a trust over the last 3 months and delivering so many meals and badly needed aid that we can work together as a team, the aid seekers and GHF, to distribute more food and aid directly and efficiently and most importantly, safely.
Is there any last bits of information you think it would be important to get across to our viewers, or you wanted to make sure you could inform people?
Sure, I think we covered most of it. But again, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is an independent, neutral organization with one mission and one mission alone: to feed people in a way that Hamas can't steal or anyone else can't steal the aid. We've done that to the tune of 136 million meals in just 3 months. We have an open invitation for the UN and any other aid organization who would like to work with us. And we're beginning to see a lot of those conversations happening. And hopefully, in a matter of days or weeks, not months, you'll see a real community of international NGOs, which GHF is a part of, feeding more people. Imagine how many people we could feed if we all work together.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Hopefully, you found that a pretty illuminating look at what is really happening on the ground. Fleshing out the situation there, that there is some real hunger. in Gaza, largely caused by Hamas trying to weaponize and control the food supplies. But we're also generally getting quite a distorted picture, distorted by vested interests designed to try and demonize Israel from what is happening there. So I appreciated getting a pretty unbiased, honest look at what the GHF is trying to do. But seeing as it was a bit of a shorter interview than we often had, I wanted to add a few closing thoughts, because I think there are a few sobering lessons from what is happening in Gaza. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry had an article immediately after the Gaza attack called A Sign of Worse to Come. And he talked about that October 7th attack and wrote, "This nightmare is a foreshadowing and a sign of unprecedented suffering prophesied to come upon the whole world very soon. This war that suddenly besieged the Jewish state should arrest the attention of all people. It is a flashing red warning of just how catastrophic and devastating are the events about to engulf all of our lives. Thankfully, though, that devastation precedes unimaginably glorious hope." And I think you can apply a lot of that to the situation in Gaza, too. We're getting some warning signs, some glimpses of what the future, what the immediate future looks like. I think you can expect Britain and America to face similar accusations and demonization that Israel faces right now. I think you see this already in the woke movement, attacking the history of Britain and America and trying to portray these nations and their culture as fundamentally evil. And that's going to escalate. People will be stirring up hatred against these nations. And one of the points Mr. Flurry made very strongly in that article that has just become more and more clear after that is the spiritual dimension behind Hamas's rabid hatred, what they did to Israel, then even weaponizing food supplies. As Mr. Flurry said in that article, these are demonic actions. They are inspired by Satan the devil, who hates human beings and especially hates Jews. That is a bold statement, but you can prove it from your Bible. This is important to realize, otherwise you will not grasp the significance of what has happened in the Jewish state of Israel. But he also says in there, when you see what the butchers of Hamas are doing to Jews, you get a terrifying picture of how fierce Satan's hatred is. He talks about Bible prophecies about a coming great tribulation and writes, other prophecies show that this great tribulation is particularly punishing to the nations of modern Israel, the Jewish state, the United States, and Britain most of all. And as we talked about a lot on this show, the Jews are descended from just one tribe of Israel. There are other tribes. And Mr. Flurry proves that in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, and we've done shows about that. Mr. Flurry writes, these nations are about to fall and no other peoples will suffer worse treatment. Even the period leading up to this tribulation is a dreadful, horrendous time. Today's tragedy in Israel is just a taste of the great tribulation. It is only a single sip of a bitter, bitter cup. Events are about to get far worse. And the way that that war has unfolded is a preview of the kind of things that are coming to Britain and America. I think there is some unique hatred for the Jews, but prophecies talk about nations conspiring to blot out Britain and America, and to blot out the name of Israel, and that includes Britain and America as well as the Jews. We're going to be subject to that same kind of hatred, the same kind of propaganda. I think the other picture that we get from GHF, from the situation in Gaza, is the way that food is weaponized, and even the way that wars inevitably cause hunger. I don't think Israel is going out of their way to starve the people of Gaza, and like he said at the start there, the picture painted by the UN is different from the picture the GHF is seeing on the ground, at least in southern Israel. But it is an undeniable fact of all history that wars end up causing hunger. In this case, Hamas started the war. Hamas then restrict food to their population. I think it's just astonishing that somehow Israel gets the blame for that and not Hamas, where it should be squarely on their shoulders. There is very real famine coming very soon, and there are very real challenges associated with trying to get food out in a war zone, and people do use it as a means of control. Alex Duval had a book in 2008 called Mass Starvation, The History and Future of Famine. And he wrote in that book, starvation wasn't something that just happened. It was something that people did to one another. He also talked about how in the majority of cases, quote, famines were not natural disasters like earthquakes or hurricanes, but were the product of politics. People deliberately cause famines. It has a history of being used as a weapon. And he talks about how famine was kind of declining, going away. But as he was writing in 2018, he was seeing more and more of that. And he said a part of the driver was of the reduction, and then the part of the reason that was turning around is the decline of megalomania and of political attitudes that regard people as dispensable. You know, that had declined with the Cold War, and so food production was getting better. But as you have groups like Hamas, you're going to see more and more people using this as a weapon. And Jeremiah Jacques, he had a really interesting article around the same time that that book came out. I think he based some of it on that book called Famine, The Black Horseman Is Not Finished Riding. And he gave an overview of the way that this has been used. But we do know, again, that famine is coming. Revelation 6 describes the black horseman, one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, personifying mass famine in the way that food is used as a weapon. There's a preview there of what is coming. And the Bible, again, has specific, detailed, kind of terrifying prophecies about Britain and America being besieged, cut off from food supplies. So that's just a couple of my thoughts from listening to that interview. I'll just conclude with one more quote from this article, A Sign of Worse to Come, where Mr. Flurry writes, "Watch Israel and watch Jerusalem. Sadly, the war there is truly a sign of worse to come, but that is only in the short term. It is also a sign of the greatest news in history, and it points to the hope of salvation for all mankind." You know, the causes of famines and suffering like that are political. It's going to take a political solution. And man has tried all these different political solutions, different forms of government. But it's not about democracy versus communism versus autocracy. It's about a much more fundamental revolution than that, a revolution of the spirit, and about mankind turning to God and submitting to God and coming under God's government. Then with that loving government, there'll be a permanent end to famine. That's why these events are about to get worse. It's bringing man to that point where he will submit to God. Well, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of Trumpet World. We really appreciate as well Chapin Foy and the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation for coming on the show. Thank you to George Haddad for engineering and production. We'll be back on Wednesday for our regular Week in Review show. Until then, keep watching your world.